This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show for your Tuesday. Matt and Patrick here today. Brett will join us in a little bit as Patrick Cooligans stops by, comes back after taking a week off, talked about a lot of different things that are going to be going on today. Patrick, how are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you today?
Let me ask you this. I'll tell you how I'm doing. Have we fired our batting coach for the Twins yet?
No.
Have we made any substantial trades at the trade deadline?
No.
So no, I'm doing horrible. How about you?
Other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the play?
It was lovely. I'm not crazy. They need to fire the hitting coach, don't they? The Twins?
Yeah, probably a good idea at this point.
He's just, I mean, are we going to break the record for most strikeouts in a season?
That's probably a decent chance, and it was funny because I saw him on one of the sites today. Oh, they're looking at Teoscar Hernandez, who's a player for the Seattle Mariners, and all I needed to know about him was it commented he actually has a higher strikeout rate than Byron Buxton, which
wow.
I don't know how that's even possible.
Why are they even? They become a laughing stock because they make themselves a laughing stock, and you know, right now, I mean, I don't see them winning a game in St. Louis. I don't see them. I see them probably losing all three games versus Arizona at home. I mean, I'm sorry. I think that by the time we get to the end of the week, we're going to be, well, at that point, what, six games under 500, probably well in second place. And it's folks, what you're seeing here is the Minnesota Twins are only concerned about can we sell more jerseys? Is it, we got the jerseys. The jerseys are great. You see the Twin Cities jersey? It's great. And they don't care about the product, and that's clear, because a legitimate team that was caring would have made some changes. Now, I'm not going to make this all about baseball. Can we talk about U.S. Women's World Cup soccer for a quick second? Did you catch any of that game versus Portugal?
I heard it did not go well, and the U.S., now for those who obviously were not awake at 2 o'clock in the morning last night when the game started, the United States played Portugal, and while the game ended in a tie or a draw, as the soccer pundits call it, which means the United States actually advanced to the knockout stage, it was not pretty from what I heard.
It was, okay, so I said this before. Is the team talented? Yes. They're trying to posterize the other teams. And if you're not familiar with what this is, it's kind of a reference to Michael Jordan in basketball, that whenever you slam, when he slammed dunk on someone, there was always a player that was kind of getting pushed out of the way as he slammed down the ball into the hoop. And the term posterized means that they made someone look bad. To give you an idea of how much this was hurting us, in the first game we had, the U.S. versus Vietnam, we should have beaten that team by 8 or 9-0. They're just not that good. Nothing against them. They've got a young team. They're just not there. We only beat them 3-0 because in my count, we left at least 4 easy goals on the field because we were trying to do something like a rotating backflip bicycle kick with a double flip kick to the person from halfway down the field. And it was just like, okay, what are you guys doing? If you just took your time, slow down. And by the way, this goes back to basics of soccer. You just take your time, take the easy, low-hanging fruit. You would have walked away with that. And I said that the problem here is in the Women's World Cup, goal differential counts in these group stages, which, you know, frankly, even if we would have won, would have hurt us, because the Netherlands last night did the same. They did what the United States should have done with the Vietnam team, and I think they beat them by 8-0.
7-0. 7-0.
It was an absolute destruction of Vietnam. They played Netherlands to a draw, but Netherlands is a good team, and you cannot push past Netherlands to win this. And so here comes Portugal, a team we're supposed to win. And they spent the first 70 minutes of the game trying to posterize Portugal, trying to get that Wheaties box, trying to do that. And as the Netherlands was, you go take a look at the Netherlands goals. They were very just basic goals, but they're effective. End of story, game over, done, you know, that sort of thing. The United States at 70 minutes all of a sudden realized, oh my God, this is a tie game. Oh my God, they could score a goal and we could lose and we would be out, because Portugal then would advance and the United States would be out of the tournament. And so what it then became in the last 20 minutes was really bad soccer. It was just really kind of rushed, hurried, frantic, panicking soccer as they were trying to, you know, get the ball down. In stoppage time, in the extra time, so I think it was like 97th minute or something like that, Portugal has a breakaway. It was expertly done. One of the Portuguese players headed it to their forward, who was running at full tilt. The U.S. defenders were basically not in good position. She got off the kick, and it bounced off the goalpost. And if that would have gone in, that would have been the end of the United States. As it did, the goalpost saved the United States. Not the United States didn't win that game. Portugal lost that game. And here we are. We limp into the next round, this round of 16. And you just, for goodness sakes, if anyone knows anyone on that team, tell them to stop trying to posterize the other team. Just get in there, nitty gritty, do the business, take care of things. Done. And I know I'm not a sports guy. I don't do sports radio. I don't do that sort of thing. But I follow sports and I've watched a lot of sports. Trust me, I have two girls play soccer. I like Minnesota United. I like the World Cup. I like watching Olympic soccer. I like it all. Stop trying to posterize the other team. It's causing you more problems than it's worth. And I get it. You want the cup at McDonald's. You want the commercial. You want the money that comes with this. I get it. Stop. You'll get tons of that if you win the thing. And you're very much still in it. It just is, you guys got to stop trying to posterize the other team, because I guarantee you in the round of 16, you get in there and it's 0-0 at the 70th minute. That other team is not going to miss the goal on that shot. They're not going to miss the goal, and you're going home. So, and yeah, it's just that's the deal. And I know I think they're amazingly talented. Gosh, some of these teams are really, really good. And the U.S. team, I think, is the best team there. It just is, they have to stop trying to posterize everyone. All right. I've had that one in my craw since the morning, since I saw that this morning. Just like, please stop trying to do this. You're going to give me indigestion. It's bad enough. Have you ever watched international soccer? It's the refs and everyone are against the U.S. as it is anyway. I've absolute watched muggings of our players on the field and no whistle. And then after the game, like, oh, I guess I should have called that. You should have. Okay, thanks. I appreciate that. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. I know this is something that Brett and Cooligan are going to talk about, but it is a huge day in Minnesota, because there is a moment where it was before and then there is a moment that was after. Same thing when we legalize gay marriage. There's a moment before, and then there's a moment after. Marijuana is legal now, kids. Let's do this. Adults 21 and older can legally possess and publicly transport up to 2 ounces of cannabis flower, up to 8 grams of cannabis concentrates, and edible cannabis products containing up to 800 milligrams of THC, the psychoactive ingredient in marijuana. They can also possess up to 2 pounds of marijuana in their homes. Hello. You're making a hammock out of that. it's a petty misdemeanor for those under 21 to possess marijuana. Now, my daughter is like, hey, Dad, marijuana is legal. Not for you yet. Had to make sure I hammer that one home. Minnesota's can now own up to 8 marijuana plants per residence. I call that one Phil. And there's Puffy. Per residence, though only 4 of them can be mature and flowering at the same time. Dude, that's still a lot of dope, man. Plants may grow indoors or outdoors, but they must be kept in an enclosed lock space out of public view. Sure. Any retailer can sell cannabis seeds, but they must be properly labeled by a business licensed by the State Department of Agriculture. Companies selling cannabis seeds to home growers should likely test them like they do any other seed, the department says. You don't want them to give you a fake product. That's just grass clippings. It is legal to consume marijuana at home, on private property with permission, and outdoors in public where it is not expressly prohibited. Several cities are looking at banning cannabis smoking where tobacco smoke is banned, such as parks and other public places. I have no problem with that. I don't think you have, I mean, it kind of undercuts your argument of smoking is bad if you say, well, this kind of smoking is bad, but the other kind is not. I think that that's fair. It is legal to give cannabis as a gift to someone 21 and older. Happy holidays. Make sure your accessory gift is some Cheetos. All right, just, you know, Matt's holiday gift giving options here. But it is not legal to give a free bag of pot alongside a purchase of, say, a $50 T-shirt. That strategy has been employed in Washington, D.C., which is decriminalized marijuana but does not have a regulatory system set up for adult use sales. So basically, you can't, you know, there that you buy the $50 T-shirt and they give it to you as a gift. The pot is, oh, by the way, you get this T-shirt and here's pot. That's what they do in D.C. Here, you can give it as a gift. Happy holidays, like I said. You got the Yule log going. Well, I got to, yeah. There'll be a log that will be burning for old St. Nick. Okay, here's what's not legal today. Selling marijuana without a license is a crime ranging from a petty misdemeanor to a felony, dependent on the amount. It is also a federal crime to transport marijuana across state borders. The U.S. Department of Transportation does not consider tribal reservation borders, though, to be state borders. So basically, you can go on the tribal reservations, buy the marijuana, drive to another part of Minnesota, and you'll be fine. Additionally, federal law prohibits marijuana users from owning firearms, even if the drug is legal in their state. Marijuana is still a Schedule I drug federally, a category which also includes heroin, LSD, and ecstasy. The Federal Gun Control Act of 1968 prohibits users of a controlled substance from shipping, transporting, receiving, or possessing firearms or ammunition, according to the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives. That's okay. I don't know many heavy dope smokers that are packing heat. I don't know if that's necessarily the problem. I don't think that's going to be an issue. For those following state laws, federal authorities have been largely hands-off on marijuana enforcement except to knock down large trafficking operations. And while the state now bans random and pre-employment marijuana testing for many jobs, that exemption does not apply to truck drivers, police officers, firefighters, medical caregivers, educators, and other safety-sensitive positions. Does that include radio broadcasters? No? Okay, great. Whew! I mean, thanks for the clarification. Minnesotans in those professions can put their employment at risk by using marijuana where you cannot use marijuana. Vehicles, public and charter schools, good call. State correctional facilities, okay. If we start having a cannabis seller in the prison, then I think we really have, you know, devolved. Anywhere smoking is prohibited by the Minnesota Clean Indoor Air Act. Anywhere that smoke or vapor could be inhaled by minors. That means you, Mall of America. But they already banned smoking there, so. Federal land such as the Minnesota Natural Forest, Voyageurs National Park, and Boundary Waters Canoe Area Wilderness. So you cannot smoke in those areas. Okay? You've been warned. Starting in March of 2025, Minnesota's marijuana law will ban cannabis smoking and vaping in multifamily housing buildings, including on apartment balconies and patios, except for registered medical cannabis patients. Until then, the law lets property managers decide whether or not to prohibit smoking in units. So, once again, it's irrelevant in a year and a half what your property owner says. Minnesota's marijuana law will ban smoking cannabis in an apartment complex. Or I guess a quadplex or something like that. I imagine that would qualify there. So, you know, just make sure you keep that in mind. And the one that's the most interesting element of this law, the process for expunge past marijuana convictions also kicks off today. Here's that process. The state will automatically expunge misdemeanor marijuana convictions for Minnesota from Minnesotans' records, but the Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension has said it could take up to a year to clear all the records. More than 60,000 misdemeanor marijuana cases will be eligible for automatic expungement, the BCA has estimated. That includes cases that defendants won or had dismissed, wiping out all records from arrest to sentencing. Minnesota will set up a cannabis expungement board to review felony marijuana offenses for possible expungement or resentencing on a case-by-case basis. The process is expected to take several years. There you go. We're legal. Minnesota now joins the rest. And we are surrounded by four narc states. Oh, that is the best. Because that's where we're going to make a ton of money. We are going to make a lot of money. And this is the great this is one of those things that makes Republicans really uncomfortable. I'll tell you what, I'll share more of that in a second. Plus, there's a lot of other laws that kicked into gear today that we're not talking about because of marijuana. I'll break those down when we do come on back. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
Billboard, baby, do a leap and make them dance when they come on. Everybody looking for a dance floor to run on.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. I'm getting word right now that they have indeed released some of the footage of the shooting that happened on 94. I'm getting varying commentaries along with that. I'm trying to find it right now. I'll see if I can find it here. We can actually talk about that maybe still this hour as that goes on. So just FYI, keeping an eye on that story as that's breaking right now. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. So, yeah, there's already Republicans who are in border counties who are like, I'm not concerned about this. I guarantee you will be about marijuana. I guarantee you. Especially when it is only a matter of time. Let's just go around the state. On the west side, Fargo, Grand Forks. Guarantee it. There's gonna be a ton. The entire South Dakota border. I mean, I guarantee it. It's gonna be like fireworks in Wisconsin. It's gonna be dope from Sioux Falls, especially on anywhere coming off Interstate 90 down there. On the south side, of course, Albert Lea, all the Worthington, all those towns on the southern border, guarantees they're going to, in the larger towns, they're going to have legal marijuana sales before too long. The entire Wisconsin border, La Crescent, Red Wing, Minneapolis, St. Paul, Duluth, everywhere on that border, I guarantee you, in the large cities, they're going to have that. And so you're going to be in these smaller counties, and you're like, we don't want to do this. And all of a sudden, you're going to see how much money. You know, say you're in, you know, a Western county and you're looking at what they're doing up in Fargo and how much money, or not in Fargo, in Moorhead, how much money they're making off of people coming from the border, the counties on the other side of the border from you going up to Moorhead and buying product there. I guarantee it's going to change a lot of mentalities. So, I think that it's kind of comical that they're still there. What is it? Mary Franson put out a thing saying, raw milk, unpasteurized milk is better than marijuana. Mary, going to college with you must have sucked. We're having a party. Let me get the milk out. Oh my God. Narc. Oh God. I don't know if she's a narc or not, but I can tell you what, if that's your idea of a fun night there, wow, Mitt Romney. Wow. Batting down the hatches, whole milk, you say. So along with marijuana legalization, a bunch of other things went into law starting today. Members of a new commission tasked with redesigning the state flag will be appointed by today. They will have until January to get the job done. Unless the legislature vetoes their chosen design, the new flag will start flying in May of next year. Can we make it a marijuana? How about a marijuana leaf pushing over a glass of whole milk? There. There it is. Welcome to Minnesota. Dang. Hey, I'd buy a t-shirt. The law aimed at making catalytic converters hard to steal and sell includes new labeling and paperwork requirements. That starts today. I mean, that was one of the better things they did as well. That this should stop catalytic converter theft. As a matter of fact, I mean, have you noticed that you don't hear even the far right wing guys screaming about this issue anymore? Ever since we stopped the Republicans who were, we don't want to put burdens on these other businesses to try to stop it. Just more cops everywhere. Expanded background check legislation sets new rules related to private transfer and sales of firearms today. Nice. Writing or updating a will, you can now use an e-signature instead of pen and paper to make it official. Okay. Schools now must notify parents ahead of an active shooter drill and give students the choice to opt out. That is, I want to make sure you hear that because, let's face it, this is one of the most traumatic things that these kids are facing today. Having to, you know, not know that there's an active, it's a drill and being told, we're going through an active shooter thing. And scares them and all these things. I mean, I just saw this, there was a story, this is not an active shooter drill, but story out of, was it Texas? Where the officer mistyped in Arizona or Arkansas as Arizona and basically found this family. They're in town for a basketball tournament. Never had any problem with the law. Guns out. Kids are getting handcuffed. Traumatized probably for life until all of a sudden she, I guess it's progress that she came out and realized, oh, I made a mistake here. And they, hey, no problem. Sorry about that. One of the officers is at that point trying to hug the kid. The damage is done. You traumatize these kids because a police officer who was thinking about using a gun didn't dot their I's and cross their T's and say, did I type in Arizona or Arkansas? Which one of them was it? These traumatic experiences, what's really disturbing about that police incident, by the way, is to watch how the police officers after the fact, like, hey, no problem, was it? Hey, it wasn't traumatic for me. I know it might be a little bit for you, but, you know, you're fine. You're fine. Just this attempt to try to convince them that, you know what, you know, you're good. Have a great day. Ugh. These kids, that's what's happening to these kids. You get a kid that's in a classroom and all of a sudden this active shooter drill, get down, get down. Kids are crying, trying to text their parents. Oh, it's just, we're just seeing what happened. Oh, okay. Well, thank God now we actually have common sense on that. Cyclists can no longer need to make the full stop. It's the Idaho stop kicks in now. Cyclists no longer need to make a full stop at a stop sign. They can instead slow and yield to any oncoming vehicles under the new Idaho stop rule, a.k.a. do what they've been doing. We just made it legal for them to do. It is now a crime to share deep fake images depicting sexual acts or imagery without the subject's consent. That's good. The law also prohibits the deliberate sharing of digitally created alter content made with the intent to hurt a candidate or influence the result of an election within 90 days of the election. Really? I'd say anytime you do that. I mean, I don't care if it's a Republican or Democrat. You shouldn't be doing deep fakes of anyone to basically try to do that. That's really disturbing. And so I don't know if this 90-day rule is applying. I don't think you should be having people make deep fakes of any candidate, period. End of story. So I will say this, just one thing about that law you should be careful of. A lot of people like to share stuff on the internet without really thinking about it. If you see a video, someone says there could be people trying to set people up. And you want to keep that in mind. They, you know, 90 days out from the election, someone could say, oh, look at this video of Trump. And it looks horrible. And you share it, and all of a sudden people are saying, well, why did you share that video? Don't you know it was fake? You know, you got to be careful of that. The law prohibits the deliberate sharing of digitally created or altered content. So they could come after an individual account. So you just need to be careful on something like that. Just, yeah, you probably do 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. Tell you what we're going to do. We're going to take a break. Come on back. I'm going to try to track down this video of what exactly happened to Ricky Cobb. And we'll talk about that. If I can find the video, we'll talk about it when we come back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Okay, AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show, 952-946-6205. Wedge Live has got this. I just watched it. Now, I did not watch it with audio. It is a bit stark here. It's not necessarily clear. And Patrick, can I give you something to do really quick for me while I'm talking about this?
Of course.
In there, I want you to pull up Wedge Live's their Twitter feed. Okay, watch the video starting at minute 14. And listen for the gunshots. I can't pull that up here on this. I can't hear when the gunshots start. And give me your impression of what happens there when the gunshots happen, okay? Because that's everything. So Ricky Cobb is asked several times why they want him to get out of his car. The trooper says he'll explain later. Now, there's your first problem. The trooper is, you need to explain, well, you are wanted for a warrant here, and that's the case. It is, the car starts moving forward. Now, it's not like the car is trying to pull out. It could easily be a situation where he just didn't put it into park, and the car starts gently rolling forward. What it looks like happens there is the officer then jumps in. Well, it looks like there's one officer in on the passenger side, and it seems like the passenger side officer is the one that shot Ricky Cobb. It would seem to me that... A lot of it depends on when the gunshots happen. If the gunshots happened just as the car started to roll, then he's pulling away because he thinks these guys are going to try to kill me. And once again, black man, Minneapolis, police officers have this. That's a legitimate concern. And the fact is they weren't identifying why he needed to get out of the car, apparently, at that time. So it is a case where, you know, and like I said, I can't see it right now because I can't have the audio. A lot of this is going to be dictated on when the shots were fired. If the shots were fired as the car started to gently roll forward, then, because no one was, it seems like the threat to the officers came when he accelerated the car. And he could have accelerated the car because they shot him, sort of situation. So, and once again, though, there is a mistake here by the troopers right away, the state patrol, that they should have identified exactly why they needed him to get out of the car. And you're not telling him why he needs to get out of the car. And then when he says he's not getting out of the car, you grabbing him and trying to drag him out of the car, that's a little bit hard to comprehend there. This is gray from what I can tell right now. This is, you know, it's interesting. Liz Collins, Bob Kroll's wife, who used to work at Channel 4 and now is kind of a far right journalist now, trying she's got a book out there. Yeah. Anyway, she had a post out that said these officers their lives were in charge. They were basically being dragged. What I see is it depends on when the gunshots were. Because if they shot the guy and he basically accelerated because he thought they're trying to kill him, which they did, then yeah. But the problem here is that it does seem, you know, and they released the other footage too here. Let me see this. The other side footage here. They've got him here. And forgive me, I know this is radio and I'm watching a video as I do this, and this is kind of a goofy thing. He's got his hands up. He does not have any, he's got his driver's license out. He is not, necessarily threatening anyone. This is the officer's body cam from the passenger side. Police vehicles are passing him. He's talking with the officer. His hands are very clearly seen. There's no reaching for a weapon or anything like that. He's just in the car. It looks like they're asking him to get out of the car, but not telling him why. And the officer opens the door, and his hands are very visible. They're trying to take him out, from his point of view, it looks like he shot him right there. So that's a little bit different. That looks like his car moves forward slightly, and he puts three rounds in him, it looks like. Patrick, from what you're seeing there, is that seeming to be what you're noticing too on this video? Here, they got the doors open. I'm looking at it again. Got the doors open. He's got his gun pointed. Yeah. He went in there looking like he was ready to he didn't look like he was trying to get him out of the car. He was looking, it looks like he went to shoot him.
I'm still watching through the video, and I'm still having a little bit of a tough time. Because you were talking about previously, the car door opened, but it was unclear. The way the camera was angled, it was unclear whether it was the officer who tried to open the door, whether it was Cobb who tried to open the door.
If you look at it from the other side of the car, all right. So I want you to go to 19 minutes. Go to 19 minutes in the video. If you're looking at it from the passenger side of the door, it sure does look like the person that's opening the car door is the officer. The officer is opening up the car door on the passenger side. Once again, they haven't identified why exactly they want him to get out of the car. He opens the car door. You can see his hands. The other officer opens the car door. So yeah, the officers open the car door. They're trying to drag him out of the car. But what it looks like at that point is as the one officer is trying to unbuckle him and drag him out of the car, the other officer just has his gun out and starts shooting. That's what it looks like. If you go to 19 minutes in this tape, you see that. Tell me I'm crazy. Tell me I'm missing something here. But that's what it looks like.
Yeah, that's what it does look like. The problem is you see the chaos begin to emerge, but I don't hear any gunshots in the video.
Okay,
itself.
They take the gun. Because if he shot him then, the cops are wrong. I mean, from what I'm seeing here. And Patrick, that's a good point. We need to make sure we say that. This is the tape that they have. The body cam footage, they're releasing it. So yeah, the officers open the car door, and they are it's not clear. Well, if they pinned him in, if they shot him, then they were wrong. I mean, if you pinned him in, you had him trapped. And so it sure does look like the patrol officer on the passenger side of the car opened the door with gun drawn. And while the other officer was trying to unbuckle him, the car moved a little bit, which he might not have had it in park. And that's when he shot him. That's what it looks like to me. So, but you did not hear, when you had the audio up, you did not hear the gunshots.
At least not at the first encounter. It might have, as you mentioned, it's impossible to prove that perhaps something happened when they had him boxed in when he drove up toward 43rd and crashed, and again, I'm kind of watching this on the fly like you are, so I'm still kind of trying to be divided in two places.
So Patrick, you're doing a great job. I appreciate that. I'm looking at the tape of them running down the vehicle at this point. Okay. So just describing. So after he pulls away, his vehicle is scraping the center median. Okay. It's clearly he's in trouble if he's not already dead at that point. One trooper hits him on the front end. Another one boxes him in. He's clearly not a threat at this point. Officer has his guns out. The other officer has his gun out. They both holster their guns, so they clearly must see that he's down. Oh, the other officer has his gun out, but, you know, yeah, he was shot before he took off. he was shot before he took off. He didn't get shot when they pulled him over. He is. You got one officer in the car trying to get him out of the car now. The other officer just goes in the back seat. He's trying to get him out of the car now. So we need to see when those shots were fired, because what it sure looks like is as the vehicle lurched forward just a little bit, and once again, we're not talking about anyone's, anyone. It sure didn't look like anyone's life was in jeopardy at that point. He did not have a weapon. That is one thing you clearly see. He did not have a weapon. He was not being told. They were forcibly trying to remove him from there. And it sure looks like the officer that opened up the passenger side door unloaded 3 rounds into him as they were trying to get him out of the car. And what looks like happened is after he got shot, he took off. So I guarantee you there's going to be this right-wing narrative. It's like, they were going to drag these officers. He was going to run them over and kill them. No, he doesn't take off. He doesn't take off until if it's where the shooting looks like it happened, that's when he took off. And because he thinking he's going to get killed. And understandably, they're not telling him why they're trying to pull him out of the car. They're trying to forcibly remove him from the car. One guy goes in with the gun pulled. And and you can see them pulling his body out of the car. So whatever happened, okay, so I want to make sure we understand. We're going to just kind of work this backwards. The boxing in of the car, when that happened, it sure looks like he was either already dead or in the process of dying. That they didn't even, so they come up on him. He's headed down the road. He is scraping the driver's side of the car against the center median. And basically, when the officers get there, they get out there with guns drawn, but quickly are holstering this gun to get the guy out of the car because he clearly is, at that point, not a threat. So what happened at the boxing in is not where this happened. This happened when they pulled him over. From the video I am seeing, and like I said, a lot of this comes down to when were those bullets fired? You have State Patrol officers telling him to get out of the car. He's asking why. They're not saying, they'll tell them in a second, which, you know, he's asking why you're wanting him to get out of the car. That's the case. He does not have a weapon in his hand. He clearly does not have a weapon in his hand. So there is no threat of stabbing or shooting or anything like that. The officer goes in from the driver's side. He's trying to unbuckle his seatbelt and get him out of the car. The officer goes in from the passenger side. You see what looks like a gun there. And Patrick, you saw that too at 19 minutes. That looks like a gun in his hand, correct?
Yes.
So he's got his gun drawn, finger on the trigger, safety off, opens the car door. Car starts to move forward a little bit, not gunning it, a little bit, like, you know, a foot or two, and this officer put 3 rounds in his body. That's not good. That's not good. Now, once again, I guarantee you, right now, right-wing media is frantically, these officers were clinging to the vehicle for their lives! No, they weren't. No, they weren't. You can see it clearly in the video. As a matter of fact, what it looks like, the biggest threat to the police officers came from when they shot him. And Patrick, correct me if I'm wrong, if you think I'm wrong on this. It looks like the threat of acceleration came after they put the 3 rounds in him.
That's what I thought. But like I mentioned earlier, I'm having trouble hearing when the specific gunshots took place.
But it sure does look like it came from the officer on the passenger side.
Yep.
When he opened up and the car moved forward like a foot.
Yeah.
And the other guy's trying to pull him out. There's no weapon seen. Hands are up and he puts 3 rounds into him. How are you shooting at your fellow officer on the other side like that? I'm not crazy about that either. If that's his gun and that's when the shots happened, that happened as the officer had the door open, he was shooting towards the other patrol officer.
Yeah, and I was thinking about that, too. That just seems so... what was he thinking?
Yeah, what were you thinking? It They were poor innocent. No. Guy did not have a weapon. They were not telling him while he was trying to get out of the car. He's basically been pulled over. And you have an officer going in the car with his gun out. I mean, if you're trying to get him, can I ask you this? If you're trying to get him out of the car, how are you going to do that with your hands on a gun? Yeah. This one doesn't look good. I'll tell you what, during the break here, let's take a break, come back, we'll see what else we can take, if we can figure out the time of the shooting. If it's when that happened, then clearly this was an unjustified shooting. If those rounds went off, when the officer went into the car from the right side, he had no weapon, he wasn't being told, he was being trying to drag out of the car, car moves forward like a foot, no one's being thrown, no one's being dragged. As a matter of fact, the threat to the officers came when the officer shot the individual from what it looks like. From what it looks like, the threat to the officers happened when he put the three rounds into the stomach of Ricky Cobb, and out of either he was slumped over dead or because he was scared for his life, he gunned the car at that point. So anyone that tries to say he was, he wasn't pulling away until he got shot. Yeah, I'll tell you what. Let's see if we can find out when exactly in that tape those shots happened. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. So it does sound like, from talking to Patrick here, the gunshots were edited out of the audio of the body cam footage, right?
Oh, I don't want to say that specifically. They might have been there, or it might have just been that the mic on the body cam was not good enough to handle such a loud.
Well, it was multiple body cams. Did the other cam pick it up at all? I mean, my guess is going to be is that they specifically took it out.
That could be, because I didn't hear them on the second video either.
All right, so I'm going to guess then. The presumption would be that the police, for lack of graphic nature, removed the gunshots. So once again, what I am seeing here, I am seeing officers pull over a vehicle. They're asking the individual to get out of the vehicle. Trooper says he'll explain later. Trooper opens first the door on the driver's side. And once again, I want to make sure one thing about Ricky Cobb. Hands are clearly seen. No weapon is visible. Hands are clearly seen. No weapon is visible. First trooper opens the driver's side door, starts grabbing him, trying to yank him out, not telling him why they're trying to yank him out of his car, by the way. The passenger side door opens up. It looks like that officer has got his gun out, safety off, finger on the trigger, and the car moves forward. And once again, this could just simply be he hadn't put the vehicle in park. He could have had his foot on the brake. And as the other officer is trying to wrestle him out of the car moved forward slightly. And it sure looks like at that point, the officer fired three rounds into Ricky Cobb. And it had to have been there. It had to have, because if you watch the video body cam footage of the officer that came in on the passenger side, he then immediately goes rolling around on the ground. And by the time they box his car in down the road, then he's pretty much either dead or on the process of dying, because the officers very quickly put him, pulled their weapons on him as they approached the car, quickly put their weapons down and got him out of the vehicle. But it sure looks like, for some reason, I'm pretty sure we're about to hear, I was scared. I'm going to be my guess. I was scared is going to be my guess. That's going to be my guess. The State Patrol officer put three rounds into Ricky Cobb. They should have, from what I've seen here, they should have. And the Wedge Live is the one saying that they asked, Ricky Cobb asked several times what they want him to get out of his car. Trooper says he'll explain later. So he's not, they didn't explain why exactly they wanted him to get out of the vehicle. They open up the doors. Once again, the other officer is it's, you know, the way it was portrayed by some right-wing sources earlier was, well, clearly these officers were being dragged out of the highway. No, they weren't. I mean, they went rolling when the car took off, but the car didn't seem to take off until the shots were fired. And once again, that's the most important thing. When exactly were those shots fired? It sure looks like it didn't come from... Okay, so there's three officers there. There's one officer behind the vehicle. There's two officers there. It's clearly not the officer on the driver's side because he's got his hands on Cobb trying to take him out of the vehicle. And it's not, I mean, you're not going to have the guy from behind the car put three rounds into his belly from that direction. So they had to have come from the guy, that the officer that opened up the car from the passenger side. Has to. And from when it looks like that would have happened, there was no just, it doesn't seem like there was any justification of all to shoot Ricky Cobb. And once again, putting aside the fact that your other patrol officer was right there as well, you're lucky you didn't shoot him. Oh, God. Oh, God. All right. I will say this. They're coming very straightforward. They're putting this out there. The fact that they were putting this out so quickly led me to believe that there would be much more vindication for the officers. It doesn't seem like that. And what we're looking at here, it looks like, for sure, and depending on when those shots were fired, looks like another unjustified shooting. It's the Matt McNeil Show, Hour 2 up next. Hour number 2 of the show here on your Tuesday. Matt and Brett here. I'm looking at the video now once again. It sure looks like, I'm trying to figure out, one of the ways that I'm seeing this get described is he's driving off, they shoot him then. I'm not seeing a vehicle moving really that much. I mean, he shot him and then they went spilling. So I don't know. And once again, I said this yesterday, if they shot him for convenience, that's not a viable option. If you shot him just because you just didn't want to have to chase him, that's not what your job is. It depends on when those shots were fired, because if from the video I'm seeing, if they were shot when it looks like they were shot, then why did they shoot him? Why were they shooting him? And you know, if you're trying to get him out of the vehicle, if you're trying to physically, why are you got your gun pulled? Why is your gun pulled? Why is your finger on the trigger? Why is the safety off? As one person said to me, he said, this reminds me of the Dante Wright situation, although it was the officer there was, except the officer in this case looks like they were trying to use lethal force, not making a mistake about a taser. So he was shot. Yeah, he was shot before when they boxed him in later on. He was already been shot. So the shooting happened at that moment. And if that's when the case is, I don't know what they're saying. That saying, see, this was a good kill. I don't see what they're saying. So 952-946-6205 is the phone number. I did have someone call up and text me to mention that the new state laws on Native American education also kick in today. That you teach. That you have to teach Native American history at this point. So there you go. That's another one of the laws here. Are you going to go toke up, go get Smokey Mokey?
I think it'd be a little bit of a drive to try to go up to the reservation that's currently selling it right now. Because apparently we're not going to be getting it in the metro area until probably about 2025.
A lot of people are going up there. Have you seen? They had a line out the door,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, Patrick, who we're going to be speaking to in a few minutes. They had some reporters up there, and yeah, it was it was a scene.
So which reporters went up there to go to the legal marijuana?
I believe it was Max that got
Max. Max, is he bringing back gifts for everyone? You can give it as a gift.
You know, that's a very good point. I wonder if you can put that on an expense report for work.
We're bringing it back for testing purposes, just to determine what it
is. That's what, yeah, your news media, you got to test the product for. For your listeners and your readers, exactly.
We got some DVDs of Rick and Morty. I brought some of those cheese balls. We're all good. We'll be fine for a while. That's the crack news team over at the Minnesota Reformer. 952-946-6205. When was the, I'm going to ask you something completely different from what we've been talking about. When was, how, and this is going to go back in time. This is such an innocuous thing too. It might take you a second to think about this. When was the first time you walked into one of the big box hardware stores? When was the first time you did that? A Home Depot, a Lowe's, a Fleet Farm, something like that.
First time ever?
First time ever. Menards. First time you ever walked into one of the big ones.
It probably was a Menards, I would guess. Going with my dad as a young kid, if we're going literal first time, probably, you know, 7 or 8 year olds.
But those were the smaller Menards, not like the ones they have kind of today.
They weren't the giant ones like they have today?
Well, I think, well, maybe, they have Fleet Farm, maybe they were. I remember when I, okay, so I had, when I moved into my house, there was a Knox Lumber where Hopkins Honda is now. There used to be a Knox Lumber.
Oh, really?
There.
That was a lumber store. Okay.
Yeah, that was, well, it was that kind of mid-level hardware store. There had been the door, the namesake ones you had, the ones that were on your street, you know, the local guys. And then there were the starting to rise of these larger ones, and then came the big box ones. So I remember the first time I went into, I think it was a Home Depot, and I walked in there. There was two people greeting you. They had one person working grills, one person working lawnmowers. They had two, three people working power tools. You had, lumber people, experts all throughout the thing that were just sitting there ready to talk about lumber, get you on board. Four or five gardening specialists out there, you know, talking about, you know, that knew their stuff. It is, and what it was, I think it was just a marketing ploy to a point. They used to have a guy that all he did was do keys there. That was his job. He was hired by, I think, Home Depot to be the key guy.
Yeah, you're almost describing a bizarro world here. Well, they actually have staff for every department.
They would staff everything. Concept? There was like four guys in the paint department. It was remarkable. I mean, and you went in there, and what it was they had to compete with the mom and pop neighborhood hardware stores. So they basically created a large version of that. And so it was very interesting, and it was, I'm sorry, it was a trick. So yesterday I had to go to, I'm not going to say which one, I had to go to Brooklyn Park. That kind of narrows it down for you. I had to go to Brooklyn Park to go to one of these big box stores. I have been going to other ones. You walk in now, you can't even find a staff member in most of them. Ever. Or when you do, they give you that look of someone who's, I'm sorry, if you wait here, I'll be back in about 10 minutes. I'm helping like five other people right now. Great. I'll just wait here, tickety-tock. Come on back. I'm not going to see you again.
No, that's absolutely true. I know from my own experience of having to go to those stores, it's very tough to find someone if you need any help.
You can't
on
get
your own.
And they basically are like, it's over in that aisle. It's no more than, hey, let me take you down here. Let me show you this product. This is a really good one. You'll like this. This is the one you want. Let me take a look at that screw. Oh, what you want is these over here. These, none of that anymore. It's basically like, I got to find it. So I go to this big box store in Brooklyn Park. I have to go to this one because the stain we got for our deck came from this place. And so you want to match the stain deck, the stain we have. So I had to go up there and go get it. I walk in the place, and this is one of those massive places. No map, no nothing. No, hey, you want this? Go here, go here. Nothing like that. Aimlessly roaming for about 20 minutes till I find like the first thing I need on my list. Eventually get over to the paint stain area to where I pick up the stain I'm going to need. There's a little sign. Buzz will send someone right on over. Buzz. buzz again. Buzz again. It was at this point I saw some harried guy that was coming through, is kind of restocking shelves. I said, I'm sorry, is there someone working paint today? I need to get something done. Oh, yeah, I'll see if I can find someone. The guy that get the first guy, he looks at me like I'm speaking French. You know, like, you want me to do what? And I'm like, okay, you're stationed here. This is your job performance area, right? Well, I'm nearby, but I guess I could help you. Then comes, and he can't figure it out. I mean, even though I've got the label from their store telling them the whole thing, this is all I need is this right here. Just got to mix up a can of this. I'm gone. I'm out of your hair. He has no clue. They call another person. She had no clue. Everybody's like, ah, this has got to be embarrassing. 30 minutes later, one of the store managers finally comes on down. He doesn't really know what he's doing. He eventually basically, you know, I think pulls up an instruction manual on how to, you know, they change the codes or something like that. Eventually I get it. And I said, and as I'm driving back home, I said, they really tricked us, didn't they? They put this out there. It's like, it's your local, it's like your local hardware store, only much bigger. Look at the great selection, all this stuff. And I can tell you right now, I've got a local hardware store. This is why I didn't go to them with this. I went to the store because I had to find that right stain. I usually go to them, and I go in that store, and there's always someone here who knows where everything's at, points me in the right direction. It's a small little store. I still go there. It really is hard to see how much, like I said, I've talked about the way the big box stores have wiped out these businesses, and now that they have, how little is like, hey, you want help? Come on, man. We're not even stocking cashiers anymore. It's all self-checkout. You got to bag yourself there. That's all you get. We have some person sitting there acting like they're interested as you check out your stuff. Hopefully you can figure out the system. But I mean, it really is remarkable. It's you just say it yourself. You've gone to some of these and there's no one there.
Yeah, generally tough to find someone. And then, of course, these stores are so big. I mean, you're out there like trying to find a nail, and where are these? Oh, they're over by rugs. Oh, no, they're go by paint. Like, yeah, you're trying to wander around. Then eventually you get to talk to someone. But I'm betting as you go back and you talk about these big box stores when they first came around, like these big hardware stores, betting as soon as they drove out at least the majority of the smaller independent stores, I'm guessing that's when the layoffs probably started to happen
with the
staff at their own stores.
And that's the only way they could cut costs. All of a sudden, it's 20 people, 20% gone, 20% gone, 20% gone. And now you have the one guy frantically trying to cover everything. And, I mean, I've gone into these stores, and they've had it where I've said, you know, do you know anything about this grill? No. Okay, great. Thank you. Thanks for your help. I really appreciate that. It's kind of similar to the story I've said about when Walmart came in. I was down in Eldora, Iowa. Walmart came in down there, immediately underpriced every pharmacy by like 50 cents on everything across the board. I remember the local pharmacist that was, he was just sitting there and he's saying, I can't figure out how in the world they must be coming through with cameras and getting every single one of our products 20 to 30 cents less than we're selling it for. And they're selling these at a loss. And the second they ran them out, guess what? Prices went back up. The whole point was to get them out of the way. Same thing goes when someone tries to put in an airline flight over at MSP and like Delta's charging a ton. And all of a sudden that whatever that route is, all of a sudden they've got a brand new cheap rate and they run the other airline up and then it's back to $500 round trip on that sucker. You know, it really is sad to see how badly we've been played by this whole thing. And it's just, we're not going to get that back. We're just not going to get that back. I'm not a big fan of the big box stores, man. Not anymore. They're just such an unpleasant experience.
So it's a weird modern gilded age that we're kind of in the middle right now.
I don't need to, I'll let the house collapse around me from now on. I need to do anything. All right. So not only, I do want to mention this with Cooligan, because not only are you going to talk about, you know, Max and the sampling going on. I mean, imagine it. No, don't, not while you drive, Max. Okay. But Nestorak. But not only Max doing his, you know, going up to Red Lake and the legalization of marijuana today, but also that story out of Hastings the Hastings area.
Yeah, I'm certainly not going to be eating any fish from the Mississippi River anytime soon. Oh. I mean, in all seriousness, I mean, the guidance says basically don't eat fish from the Mississippi between Hastings and St. Paul for people who are children or women who may or become pregnant. I'm thinking that should probably be to everybody.
Yeah, I think we're it's like, well, it's fine for me. No, I would say, you know, treat me like a baby, man. Yeah. And it's bad stuff, but that's the latest thing out there. Obviously, you guys will talk about that. It's Brett talking to Patrick Cooligan right here from Minnesota Reformer right here on AM 950.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Brett Johnson with you here on a Tuesday afternoon. And we're joined again by Patrick Cooligan, who is the editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer. Make sure you go to MinnesotaReformer.com for the latest in Minnesota news and politics. As today we are going to be talking about marijuana legalization in Minnesota, as recreational weed is now legal in the state. Plus, we'll be talking about why you probably shouldn't be eating fish out of the Mississippi River. That's according to the Minnesota Department, or the Minnesota DNR. And needless to say, I probably wasn't planning on doing that anyways. But we're going to be talking about this new DNR recommendation from the state saying that some of the fish that you could be catching in from the Mississippi River could be contaminated with PFAS chemicals. So, Patrick, thanks so much for coming on the show today.
Always a pleasure.
Absolutely. So, as I mentioned, recreational marijuana is now legal in Minnesota as of today, here on August 1st. That is for adults age 21 and older. They are able to use and possess marijuana in Minnesota, making us the 23rd state in the union to legalize cannabis for recreational use. The first dispensary to sell marijuana for recreational use is now open and selling to people on the Red Lake Nation, which is significant because most other retail places that aren't on Native American reservations probably won't be able to sell until about 2025 to get through all of the licensing and procedures needed with that. So I understand, Patrick, you guys have had some reporters checking things out around the state today. What have you been hearing from them on how things have been going today?
Yeah, Max Nestorak is up at Red Lake, and he was there, and you can go to our website, MinnesotaReformer.com, and see all the folks in a very festive mood. They were waiting in line for the doors to open and made the significant trek up there along with a lot of reporters, photographers. So as you mentioned, Red Lake opening, probably gets a year or more head start on the rest of the industry, which is expected to be as much as $1.5 billion industry. And so the other folks who are trying to get in to the industry are going to have to wait on the new regulatory regime and all the licensing procedures, as you mentioned. Although currently, of course, we continue to have the low dose edibles, THC edibles and drinks. So that's kind of a lot of places already have that available. But as far as so-called flower and other products, folks in the Twin Cities are going to have to wait. Although I think there's still kind of a real festive atmosphere around the metro today, and we have a reporter, Madison McVan, who's out kind of going to events and checking out the scene, if you will, as people enjoy this newfound freedom. I don't know about you, but I have to say, growing up in the 90s, 80s and 90s, this is just, if you had told me, you know, as a college sophomore in 1995, that in 27 years or whatever it is, I'd be able to walk down the street and get myself some THC gummies at the corner store. I think I would have been pretty surprised at the time. And so, in general, I think it's a pretty good day to be a Minnesotan. To celebrate this newfound freedom and finally ending, I think, what has been a destructive prohibition regime.
I'm absolutely with you. I mean, even going back like 10 or 15 years ago, I would have been relatively shocked just for the fact that Minnesota, when it kind of comes to these types of vice issues, is usually a little bit behind the curve. I'm even thinking about, you know, like the sale of fireworks, where we've obviously lagged behind states like Wisconsin. So I thought we would kind of go in the same boat when it came to cannabis legalization. But lo and behold, we do have it now recreationally legal in the state. Do want to focus a little bit now on the ability of Native American tribes and their ability to sell a little bit ahead of the curve, as we were mentioning. Let's talk about why that is the case, and I'm curious if there's expected to be any other expansion from other possible Native American tribes around Minnesota to open their own dispensaries, because I imagine this could have a pretty big economic impact for some of these places.
Yeah, so these are sovereign nations, so they don't... Their laws are different from the rest of the state, and so they're allowed to make their own laws regarding legalization, and Red Lake recently did, and White Earth has as well. Max, a reporter, scooped that as well on, I think that happened on Friday. So, you know, for now, they're the only game in town, if you will, as far as having the full suite of products. And they plan to expand, and I think we'll see White Earth also opening stores in the near future. And then they also have the ability to open dispensaries off reservation via compacts that they're going to negotiate with the administration of Governor Tim Walz. So definitely an opportunity, especially here in the early going, where they can draw some traffic from neighboring states, but then also from Minnesotans, maybe in the cities or nearby, who maybe are just interested in the novelty of it, and will also spend some money on the reservation. Red Lake is unfortunately the poorest of our tribal nations, and so hopefully this would provide some economic relief.
Well, I know you mentioned in the newsletter this morning that you are going to be working on a column eventually that talks about maybe kind of how we should portray the legalization of cannabis, and how maybe it should be mildly discouraged, but not quite saying, well, we need to make it illegal, but kind of treating it like we do alcohol, for instance, where obviously it's legal, but it's a little bit discouraged. Give us a little preview on what you might be talking about in that upcoming column.
Yeah, I don't think that prohibition is a good idea when it comes to these vices. I don't think that all it does is it catalyzes the black market, and you waste resources chasing it. And then, you know, some people, very often people of color, wind up getting caught up in the justice system, whereas white people get away with whether it's marijuana or what have you. At the same time, I think we ought to regulate, and I think that if we're going to treat this as a public health issue, then we ought to be serious about it. And I think that Minnesota's tighter regulations on alcohol, which have been loosening in recent years, but, you know, bars closing at one. I remember when I'd come here to visit a college friend, and everything would close. It seemed to me that everything closed early. I think I was living in Chicago at the time. And I worked at a bar. We stayed open until, I think, 4 on Saturday nights, Sunday mornings. I just don't think that was good for anyone. There's really no reason to be out at that hour. And you're not really inhibiting someone's freedom very much, whereas the potential costs of that are high. So, you know, I think you can apply that to gambling. I don't think making it easier to gamble is great. I don't think the state being involved in gambling is a great idea. It's not to say it should be illegal again, but I think we can take a policy posture that is not sanctioning the behavior. And I think the same would go for smoking marijuana on the sidewalk, for instance. Currently, the new law would allow for that. I don't think that's a great idea. I don't think that we would want open containers of alcohol on the sidewalk. There might be some area of a city that might want to do that at certain hours of the day. But, you know, we've had great success in the United States curbing tobacco use. And we've saved a lot of lives that way. We've done that through some pretty tight regulations on where people can use it and when they can use tobacco. And I think we ought to take the same approach with these other substances. And I think there's probably some resistance to my way of thinking because progressives or libertarians, they have, during this debate, they've never wanted to acknowledge that there's a downside to all this behavior. And I get that because you're in the middle of this debate trying to legalize it. So why would you acknowledge that there's a downside? But now it's legal. So why don't we now just have a realistic conversation about you know, how much marketing we want around these products and how much exposure children should have to them via marketing or be at events or parks or in the or on the sidewalk. I think these are reasonable discussions to have. We want to have, to Governor Tim Walz said he wants to have the most family-friendly place in the country or the best place to raise children. And, you know, I don't think an open container of alcohol on the street matches up with that goal. And I don't really think that, like, someone smoking openly on the sidewalk matches up with that goal either. We're not trying to be puritanical here. I'm not in favor of prohibition. But these are public health issues, and we ought to take them seriously.
I think you bring up a good point with that marketing piece, because especially as we see, I'm guessing by 2024, especially into 2025, these types of dispensaries are going to be popping up just about everywhere. And yeah, there could be some issues popping up with marketing. So yeah, that's going to be something that I think will be a major issue coming up in the next couple of years. I do want to move on to one other story you guys have been working on over at the Reformer, and that has to do with fish from the Mississippi River, because state health officials have issued an advisory saying not to eat fish caught in the Mississippi from St. Paul to Hastings, as well as Lake Rebecca. And this is due to those infamous PFAS chemicals that you've probably been hearing about from 3M. The advisory applies to children under the age of 15, plus people who are or could become pregnant, and people who are breastfeeding or plan to breastfeed. Kind of sounds like I'm reading a disclaimer for some sort of drug commercial, but that's essentially the guidance from the state saying don't be eating the fish from the Mississippi River. So I'm curious about the timing of this advisory that was issued, because as I understand it, it sounds like the DNR and 3M had some of this data back in June, but they waited until now to basically issue this advisory. So I'm curious as to the timing on this and why they decided to wait till now rather than put out this advisory a month ago.
Yeah, they said they had to analyze all the data, although some of that was they were trying to determine whether the risks inherent in eating this contaminated fish were offset by the fact that fish is healthy to eat. I'm a little baffled by that. I think this story shows that the chemical contamination caused by 3M is just going to be something that we're going to be confronting for the foreseeable future. It's much bigger, I think, than we realized even 5 years ago. I think that we're learning more about what acceptable levels are and how much it's in our environment. And our reporter on this, Dina Winter, did a lot of investigative work on 3M chemical contamination in the East Metro. That goes back to really after the Second World War and the 1950s. And the company did not alert the public or regulators for an awful long time, even though they knew what was happening. It's a bigger story than maybe people realize. And also in the background here is that 3M is, you know, negotiating this $10 billion settlement or thereabouts for contaminated drinking water systems all over the country. So this is quite a story, and it's going to be for a while.
And does the recent legislation that the legislature just passed, which I believe banned these PFAS chemicals, does that have an impact at all on what's happening with the Mississippi in terms of how things are reporting? Or is this kind of more about, well, preventing these types of things from happening in the future?
Yeah, the problem is that these chemicals are very difficult. They're very stable. And that's why they're so useful. But the problem is that that means that they accumulate in the environment. So it's great that we're going to cut their use. But that really doesn't mean that there couldn't be new chemicals. So it's going to be hard to institute these regulations. And because they are so widespread, they're used in an awful lot of products. And it doesn't really help us with respect to the contamination that's already there, because the chemicals, they don't break down. That's why we call them forever chemicals.
And final question for you, are there any more ongoing investigations or plans by state officials regarding what's happening with the Mississippi River? Any future guidance that they've given an indication on, or are we still kind of early in the process in terms of, well, what we kind of know about what's been happening? Because as you said, this is a big deal. This is the Mississippi River, a huge river, and that's a big area we're talking about, basically from Minneapolis or from St. Paul down to Hastings and Lake Rebecca.
Yeah, I mean, they apparently 3M is this is an ongoing investigation that's not public, and 3M has filed some 10,000 pages for this report. So I guess stay tuned as we work our way through and learn more about this.
We can learn more over at MinnesotaReformer.com. Follow along the great reporting that Patrick, Dina, and the rest of the crew do over there. Read more about what we're talking about today again over at MinnesotaReformer.com, as we have been speaking with Patrick Houlihan of the Minnesota Reformer about some of the stories they've been working on. Patrick, thanks so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you. Always good to be here.
All right, let's take a break and send things back over to Matt McNeil on AM 950.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. So I spent a good chunk of the Cooligan interview just watching the tape over and over and over again. A few things that I've noticed. One, he clearly is saying, why are you getting me? Why am I being arrested? And the State Patrol is not answering him. Now, I think that you have to tell someone. I don't think you can just basically start arresting people without, you know, explaining what the cause is, especially in Minneapolis, considering the nature of what's been going on. The officer, the patrol officer who gets in on the driver's side, it's not his gun that's drawn, because you can see his gun clearly on his belt. So unless he's Yosemite Sam, he just doesn't have two guns. His gun's not the one that's drawn. It's got to be the officer on the passenger side. And what I'm seeing is the vehicle does start moving forward, but it sure looks like, well, I mean, it has to be, the shots have to be fired at that point. That's when the car really accelerates away, is after he's already been shot, lethally shot. And so, it's very hard for me to look at this tape and say, yeah, this was justified. I mean, once again, you're going to have, it's going to be similar to Dante Wright, where they're like, well, you know, he could have killed, you know, remember when they were, police would basically try to, you know, make it fantastical to try to justify it. Like, he could have killed a busload of nuns. No, he didn't. And so, and this after the fact thing, I mean, what I'm seeing on the body cam footage is a guy that says, why are you pulling me out of the car? And when the officers refuse to tell him that, He puts the car in drive. It starts to slowly roll. It looks like at that point, three shots are fired. And this goes back to what I said yesterday, which is it sure seems like this was shooting for convenience versus necessity. You could have just let him go. They could have tracked him down. You could have gone there. And before you say, the bus full of nuns! No, it's... he didn't need to die. And I don't see anything in this tape that justifies shooting him. I mean, we don't have laws that say when a police officer feels as if a car might move more than they want to, that they can put three rounds into somebody. That's not what the law states. Now, let's revisit one of the things that I have talked about before, is that it's very hard to get convictions against officers that break the law because basically you have to have real malice, a la Chauvin and the other four officers, 9 minutes of video of them murdering someone in the streets, for you to basically be able to argue in a court of law that, yeah, this is wrong. This officer is going to, I guarantee you, that this is probably not going to lead to any charges or firings, or I don't even know if it's going to be remedial training. I don't know. Because the argument's going to be, when the car started moving, I was scared! And I was scared is a justification to murder somebody by a police officer. I have said before that in the state of Minnesota, a police officer could be drunk as a skunk off duty at a bar, look at someone and say, I'm gonna shoot ya. Drive drunk home, go get their gun, drive back to back to the bar, get in there, shoot the guy, and all they have to do is say, sure, I went and got the gun, I got here, but I was scared. They're already, apparently the right is already screaming, he could have dragged an officer down the highway. Well, but he didn't. And both officers hopped back up and were fine. And so what you're saying is the hypothetical injury justifies the murder of Ricky. And no, that's... the hypothetical circumstance doesn't do that. So 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205 is the phone number. All right. There are a lot of people who are a lot younger than me. I am 54. There are a lot of people who are between the age of 35 and younger who feel as if I am horribly off base in regards to this idea of shutting down the 35W bridge. We had the interview yesterday where the individual was arguing, the argument should be, as we fill in, or not 35W, 94, you fill in 94 running from basically 35E in St. Paul to 35W in Minneapolis. You fill it in, you make it two lanes in each direction, down from the 3 to 5 lanes it currently is. You put traffic lights back through there to basically redeem it for the neighborhood, along with sidewalks and bike trails and mass transit lanes and stuff like that, and that it will be a much better solution than 94 is right now, which I'm not going to deny. 94 has been an eyesore. And it was built under racist pretenses because they went through the African-American communities and they went through Jewish communities. And that's when they built a big road, that's what they did. They looked for the minority communities. That's why, take a look at the loon ball design of 35W once you get north of the University of Minnesota and had the twists and turns. They had to go out of their way to basically try to hit every lower income neighborhood through there. So, it is a bit of an eyesore there. I agree with a lot of stuff here. I think it'd be great to have bike trails. I think it'd be great to have better sidewalks. I think better mass transit is a good thing. But there is one slight problem here that when I bring this up, I can tell this is not something they want to address, or they want to basically just kind of dismiss. And that is 160,000 cars travel 94 between St. Paul and Minneapolis every single day. 160,000 vehicles, cars, trucks, semis, all that sort of thing. And I think you've got a lot of idealists that have fallen in love with this will be great. And I'm not sure it's going to be. Now, I've had multiple people kind of look at me and say, you don't know what you're talking about. Well, you know, I was a traffic reporter for 6 years. And I saw directly how traffic patterns are affected by closures, lane restrictions, stuff like that. I have plenty of experience with that. Doesn't mean you want to do research on it, fine, do research. But you still have to figure out what you're going to do with 160,000 cars. Because your argument is, well, everybody will like it. You're only looking at the people that live within, what, 3 or 4 blocks of 94 right now getting the benefit of this. What about everyone that lives on the east side of St. Paul, Woodbury and Stillwater and Lake Elmo on that side, who come in to the city from Hudson, Wisconsin, that come in and work in Minneapolis, or the people in Minneapolis that want to go to St. Paul every day? You, with this level of traffic, now I want to bring up a few things that I think you need to kind of accept and understand. When we lost the 35W bridge, every major roadway around that got, especially that anything that got across the bridge, whether that was, you know, Hennepin Avenue, Central 3rd, that bridge, 10th Street Bridge, any roads that came down, they were all packed because you lost a major thoroughfare through the heart of Minneapolis. This wasn't 6 or 7 miles from downtown Minneapolis to downtown St. Paul. This was one bridge, and it created traffic chaos on a lot of these roads. 280 was packed. 94 was a lot busier. Because you lost one bridge, you're going to lose 94 from 35W to 35E. You're going to have an insane amount of secondary traffic. You cannot restrict a road that has 160,000 vehicles on it per day, a road that is already busy as busy gets. Back-to-back, bumper-to-bumper traffic in much of that stretch. Turn that into a traffic light area, heavy area roadway, and think you're going to get people through that in the same kind of convenience. And then kind of have this kind of nonchalant, oh, well, people will stop driving. I live in Woodbury. I work in Minneapolis. What do you mean I'm going to stop driving? Well, you can take a bus, because it's really easy to sit there and say, you know, my idea is great. So you taking 3 transfers every morning and an hour and a half on a bus as opposed to 40 minutes, you see, that's a sacrifice for my plan. No, it doesn't work that way. I'm going to take a break. Come on back. I want to finish with this because I want to make sure I understand. I agree with a lot of these concepts, but you guys just don't want to address the 800-pound gorilla, which is 160,000 cars use that stretch. And yesterday when we talked about it, you know, they were like, oh, well, we'll just send it to a different part of the town. So, well, that aren't you just then just shifting the problem to a different part of the area? And the mentality was, yeah, because there's less people there. Wait a second here. Isn't this all about better roads for people? You got to still have that road there that's ready to take traffic. Now, I'm not saying you have to expand it to 6 lanes in each direction, but I think that you need to rethink this if you're basically just trying to turn this into Summit Avenue, because I can tell you right now, if 94 from downtown St. Paul to downtown Minneapolis was like Summit Avenue, St. Paul as a whole would be a freaking nightmare to drive through. It would be a nightmare. Every road would be backed up. Every cross street would be backed up. It would be a nightmare. I'll talk more about this when I come back. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. two really quick things here before, because we got even more breaking news right now. But two things. One, we already have a major stretch of massively used highway with traffic lights on it. It's Central 65 up in Blaine. And that's a nightmare. That's a freaking nightmare zone. They're going to go through there and fix it, thank God. But even with faster speed limits, that's a mess up there. That's without shutting down a major road around it, if you didn't shut down that one. And by the way, there is also this false notion there are no businesses, no corporations are on the entire stretch of 94. It's like, what the hell are you talking about? Go off Vandalia, go off 280. There's tons of industry over there. And what I'm saying, one of the things I want to point out is, I'm not talking about industry that ships via FedEx or UPS. I'm talking about industry that ships their own trucks and moves product all over the place. You basically take away that major highway, they're leaving, and they're taking the jobs with them. And I get it. There's a lot of people that say, well, they'll leave and we'll have new jobs. Will you, though? Because I'm not saying they're going to move out of town, but they'll just move up to they'll move up to 694 and 35E, where there's going to be a tremendous amount of more traffic and easier access to a highway. If you don't understand how corporations work and major industry works, you probably shouldn't talk authoritatively about massive impacts to their bottom line and how it's going to affect them, or just act like they don't even exist, because that's your problem. You've come up with a great idea, and anytime anyone points out, well, there's 160,000 cars that are going to be coming down this road every day. What are you doing with them? What do you do with all the businesses there? You just go, oh, that doesn't matter, or, oh, that doesn't exist. That's not solving any problems. I think the land bridge idea is a good one, and I have no problem in doing a land bridge over that entire stretch. I think it'd be a good thing. But this idea of we're just going to turn everything into a freaking country road and think like, you know, well, we can go hike down to the old fishing hole. I don't know if that's really smart. Okay, how about this one? Former President Donald Trump has been indicted by a federal grand jury on charges based on his attempted coup to remain in power despite losing the 2020 election. The former president is indicted on four charges: conspiracy to defraud the United States, conspiracy to obstruct an official proceeding, obstruction of an attempt and attempt to obstruct an official proceeding, and conspiracy against rights. That's a tough one. In a statement posted for Truth Social site, Trump called the charges fake. They're not. They're actually really true. The Department of Justice has been prosecuting people in Trump's mob who assaulted the Capitol on January 6th for more than 2 years. In the past year, the federal prosecutors started going more aggressively after those who took part in laying the groundwork for that day. At the head of the scheme is Trump himself, whose White House and his campaign directed the efforts as part of a plan to pressure then-Vice President Mike Pence. It already sounds like he's already picked up Eastman. He's going to try to throw Eastman and Giuliani under the bus. That's what at least it sounds like, that his defense is going to be, well, they told me to do it. They're really the bad guys. And heck, I wouldn't be surprised if they will make sure your family's loaded. Just take the heat. I mean, that was the whole thing with Nixon, is just he ran out of people to fall on swords for him. And that's going to be his whole thing, is who's going to defend me now.
One thing to clarify too, this is the federal investigation. There's still the Georgia investigation that's on the cusp of wrapping up, too.
And the New York investigation, which is also in the process of going. That Georgia investigation is even more interesting, because they've got him dead to rights, saying, "I need you to find me more votes. You know, that's, I need you to fix the election." A bit of a busy news day today. I'll try to post up on social media as we go through the day, but obviously a lot going on. You know what it would be nice right now? A big old joint. Hey, Native Roots Radio up next. We're back tomorrow. Till then, see ya.